Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Down South and Dirty with Scott Smith and Stacy Hopkins. I hope everybody has recovered from Thursday.
I haven't.
Okay. I noticed you done posted a couple of hangover remedies. but the debate was crazy. It was entertainment. Yeah. But today, y'all, if anybody is, you know, that follows us, you know, probably seen early in the week that there was a different show playing. But, you know, we like to keep things relevant, you know, as much as we possibly can, but yet stay on the same mindset and track that we find ourselves on. And all of this stuff just kind of merged together. But before we get to talking about what our show is going to be about today, Stacy, do you have your dirty list for today?
Oh yeah, and it's very, very good. There's been a lot going on, and some of it we're going to talk about in the actual show because I've been having spontaneous brain explosions all weekend practically. But let's see, my dirty list: friendship towers. I got a couple of them. The issue is people aren't aware. Friendship Baptist Church sold their property for the building of the Atlanta Hall. I mean, the new Falcon Stadium in Atlanta, for I believe is $19.5 million, and they also own this housing development across the street, Friendship Towers, that basically has seniors and disabled people. Derek Bozeman, a local activist and talk show personality in WAOK, has been on this case from the beginning. Big ups to him. But the building, Atlanta's been pretty hot since May. It has been without air conditioning. But there are other problems in this HUD-owned or HUD-managed property because they get federal tax dollars through subsidies through HUD. And these people are elderly, they're sick. Anybody who's ever lived in a project high-rise, you know that's made out of cinder block. It holds heat. And if you live on the upper floors, it is unbearable. So they need to, whatever they're trying to do, they need to stop. And it's getting really, really crazy with that case. Also, I got beef with East Point, Georgia. Voter registration drives do not have a fee assessed to them. I brought this to the attention of the city of East Point in August of 2014 when I was working as the field director for WeCount, Georgia One's voter empowerment program, and we came across the problem of them charging for voter registration fees. You can't do that, and I need for you to stop doing that. And it's really, really funny because there's nothing in the state election board to say that you can't do it or that you can. I want to get that fixed, but I've had it's just stunning that I'm going to be charged $1.70. That's $170 per drive if I want to do a drive in the city of East Point. If you're listening and you're part of city council, Mayor Peters, I need y'all to do better, but I'm coming to let y'all know you are going to do better because I'm not doing this with y'all no more. Let's see, who else is on my dirty list? Oh, DeKalb County and the stadium thing, the soccer stadium.
Wow.
They kind of slid that one under, you know, and it was like right after Mike Bowers released that report about the corruption in DeKalb County, and they slid that deal through slicker than snot. So DeKalb County residents, you know, there's a reason why we're number one. This state is number one for corrupt political corruption. And some people were saying, you know, DeKalb is number one and all that. To me, that argument is like saying you're the tallest little person. You know, the whole state is corrupt. We're number one. This is why they call it the dirty. And I got probably some more, but go ahead. I don't want to take up all the time talking about my dirty list. My dirty list can be often long.
Okay. Now, mine, have you ever had my top dirty list was your last one. So I guess I'll finish off on the cab thing. Now, you know, I've been living outside the metro for almost 15 years now. So when you talk about corruption, you know, we thought we had some problems in West Georgia. We thought we had problems. So, like, you know, now I had forgot about DeKalb County. And this, DeKalb County is not new, people. This issue is not new. I mean, this was going on when I was a child. And I'm from, and I was raised in DeKalb County, Gresham Park. Y'all know about that 34. You know, ever since everybody hit me straight out of, I do have a Facebook post up with my straight out of Gresham Park on it. But this is getting out of hand. And I know that people in DeKalb County are tired of everybody talking about how corrupt DeKalb County is. And I ain't got but one thing to say on that. If y'all tired of it and you have incumbents in seats on the county commission, it seems like if you're tired of certain things being said, that you would send a message. If you ain't tired enough to keep letting people get elected, then you can't talk. And I'm specifically talking about the county commission, not talking about the other elected officials in the county yet. Because some of y'all I like. Some of y'all I actually really, really, really like. I thank y'all, you know, y'all, I see y'all as
but
friends.
But that's different. Business is business. But personal is personal.
But, and when I say that, because for you to be a friend of mine, there's only so much dirt I'm going to allow you to bring inside of my universe. So it's like this. You know, if I start finding out you're dirty, I say you become like Pluto. You may be a planet this day. You might be a dwarf planet the next day. But, you know, I can't have you, so you can't be one of the inner planets. You can't do that. I need some solid. But the DeKalb County thing is really getting me because, I mean, I grew up here, and we have such a wonderful county with so much potential, and people got to realize this one thing is that, you know, and I got people saying they pay so much attention to us. Well, one of the reasons they pay so much attention to us. And they give us the same amount of attention to Atlanta, so nobody don't get this twisted. But for the longest time, DeKalb County was the second most wealthy African-American community in the nation behind Prince George. It was in Prince William or Prince George County back in Maryland. So therefore, our government here in DeKalb County is primarily African-American run. So we have a higher standard in the nation than most people do, because we rank so high in our affluence. So that the potential is there for us to be able to do some really great things and be a symbol of a beacon for other African-American communities across the nation. So with that being said, I know everybody, at least everybody that was born, at least up until the mid-80s, have heard their parents and grandparents tell them this. And I'm going to say it again. We are African-Americans. Okay? We've been here for over 400 years. We know that the country does, we know that there's a feeling about us. We know people in their feelings about us. They won't all admit it, but they are. So that means everything we do, we can't just be two times better, but we need to be five times better than everybody else. And that even includes our elected officials. You have to work hard. You got to put out more. The policies that you set have to be more trendsetting. The legislation that you introduce has to be more world changing than anybody else because people are watching us. So when you screw up, yeah, they're gonna pay attention because everybody wanna say at the same time wanna say, see, we can't let them do nothing. They did. You know there's a stereotype out there. Why are we continuously reinforcing?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my big dirty list right there. That's it right there. I am sick and tired of black folks acting like we ain't black folk no more. We letting it go. We used to have this sense that we knew we had to be better. Oh, just because the president, you know, I should have put it up as, you know, since I knew this was gonna be on my dirty list, I should have put it up as a audio clip. But yeah, we know my president is black and my Lambo is blue. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? He won. There's a whole other,
and he's getting ready to leave.
Thank you. These 8 years is over, folks, and we do not have a replacement for him. So guess what? We need to get together and start acting like that Jesus done came already, because Jesus ain't came yet. Okay? Y'all need to get together and let's make it happen. Now, with that saying, that leaves a perfect segue into what our show is about today. As y'all noticed that, you know, first we were talking about, you know, feminism and fraternity, you know, and paternalism and, you know, the opposite views or whatever. But, you know, we still want to talk about feminism, but then we got this Bernie Sanders and this Black Lives Movement thing, and then I got to sitting there thinking, and me and Stacey was popping this last night as Facebook and social media and Twitter was blowing up with the
oh, my
the
God. I was up till 4 in the morning.
In Seattle. Now, y'all wondering, some of y'all are going to wonder, why you want to connect feminism with this? Well, if you go, I'm going to read the promo to the show, to this particular show, and y'all understand this. As progressives, we have two major groups now that are driving and pushing the edge of progressive policy, and they are feminists and African-Americans. Because, see, if you look at those two groups inside of the progressive spectrum, those are where the most egregious oppressions and suppressions take place in the progressive universe. Women and African Americans, but you can say minorities, but we're the two largest groups that are pushing. So, and we got one candidate right now that seems to connect all of them. And I'm going to go ahead and say it, and I'm sure Stacey will agree. We both Bernie Sanders supporters. Let it not be twisted.
Don't get it twisted.
Don't get it twisted. We feel the burn, okay? And the thing is that we got two camps in the feminist area that if you really paying attention, there's some gaps there. Y'all think they link, but they really don't do well mixing, and that's the white liberal feminist. And our black feminists. Now, black feminists, necessarily, I'm not going to call them liberal progressives because they thing is particularly being black. And being black does not automatically put you in the progressive liberal category because we have black feminists who are conservative. We have black feminists who are social. We have black feminists who cover the whole political spectrum. Y'all can't pigeonhole us on that. Because African-Americans cover the whole political spectrum, and the one thing that most of us agree on is that we're black. Most of us agree that we're black first. Most of us. Now, we got a couple of, you know, anomalies that like being pets to the conservative machine. Y'all know y'all like Stephen in Candyland.
You talking like Wonder Twins, you know? Remember that cartoon?
No, they conveniently black, but you got me. But you know, and the difference between the two is that if you see white liberal feminists, they champion health care, wage, income inequality. They champion choice, all of those things. Not saying that black feminists do not champion those same things. But they take it a little further because the black feminist is also my mother. That's my sister. That's my cousin. Those are all the women that helped bring me up as an African American man. So they're also fighting battles on the front line for me also, such as ending mass incarceration, social justice, civil rights, the right to vote, you know, ending the prison the school to prison pipeline. They are fighting those causes that are not necessarily always, you know, our allies are there, but they're not necessarily frontline soldiers because they're not living in the mix every day.
Mm-hmm.
So we were sitting there, I was sitting there last night, and Stacey's asking me about the show and what we, you know, am I still going to do it? And I'm like, you know what, we need to connect this to this whole thing because people need to understand there's some dots to be connected here. Because
and you know what? You're going to have to do it because my brain was fried, and I was like, well, I'm going to be honest. I was like, what? But I'm feeling you. Go ahead. I see where you're going,
mm-hmm.
but go.
So
you shall proceed.
You know, so yesterday, as I'm watching this Bernie Sanders thing, you know, develop, you know, now we talked about this a little bit when we were doing our Black Lives Matter series about how
mm-hmm.
the Black Lives Matter movement is very feminist on the front end. You know
mm-hmm.
how so many women are involved as leaders in the actual protests. You rarely ever see in a Black Lives Matter movement African American men storming stages.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be a reason for that, and it may be a very good reason for that. And I've been processing why you might not, because if you see African American men storming anything, that might start World War III. Okay, the world may not be prepared to handle watching us storm something. Okay, particularly not carrying the banner of the United States of America. To watch us storming something with red, black, and green may cause a serious identity thing with the rest of the country. They ain't gonna start feeling some type of way. So I can understand the women leading the effort. But at the same time, I was watching, and me being a man, not just a black man, but a man, I'm watching this, and all I had to stop myself for a second because I seen a stereotype taking place in my head. They go to angry black woman. You got these sisters with their little finger up. They twisting their neck. Won't let a man talk. Won't let him do nothing. And I had to stop myself for a moment, like, whoa, Elliot, you can't go there. You can't stereotype the system. But what did finally piss me off about the whole thing was, is that it's Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
The one person that kind of encompasses the whole progressive movement in one package. Now I know I got Hillary supporters out there who will argue, but there's some things that Hillary does that takes her out, which is what makes me not support her. And that one of those things is her connections to Wall Street. I mean, so as a really serious progressive, you really can't sleep with Goldman Sachs and then talk about income inequality in the same breath. You can't do it. It's disingenuous. I mean, not saying that capitalism and progressivism cannot live together, but when it comes to that particular set, you're talking about greed and the attempt to form an oligarchy in its purest form. So you see all of this taking place, and even people were making accusations, and I was one of them, and I still believe it to this day after watching the Senate campaign here in Georgia and watching it up in Kentucky and watching the governor's race in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how feminism ties back into it again because, you know, on the Democratic Party side, we got this whole wing that's dedicated to it's time for a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no problem with there being a woman governor, a woman president, woman senator, mayor. I have no problem with that as long as she is the right one to lead. A woman just for the sake of having a woman is just as bad as having a black man just for the sake of having a black man.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be the right one.
Well,
go ahead.
I kind of have you know, on the feminist tip and, you know, with BLM, I get it why you often women at the forefront and, you know, who are leading the protesters, because, I mean, the movement came about because of three women, and it was basically to uplift and to not only say that Black Lives Matter, but Black women and Black queer lives matter. So I can kind of understand them being at the forefront of it, and like you said, it's less likely they don't, well, I won't even say that. After Sandra Bland, they'll shoot, they'll take you down. It don't matter. It really doesn't matter. I mean, we've seen from Tamir Rice to Sandra Bland, you know, it really doesn't matter what age or what color, you know, you just being is enough to make you a suspect. But in terms of what happened yesterday with Sanders and then, you know, I also want to talk about the divide between Black and white feminism, because there is a great divide that exists. But what happened yesterday, you know, after I've had some time to think about it and maybe a couple hours sleep, you know, I was, at first, it smelled like a straight up setup then, and it still does now. And yeah, I said it, and if I got to take it back later, I will. But until then, talk me down. Because here's the thing, Scout, and you mentioned we've all been in incidents where we've seen some real greasy stuff, y'all. We really have. We're saving it for the book. But here's the thing that strikes me funny. Hillary was in Seattle, too. The protesters did not go to Hillary's event, maybe because they didn't have the $2,700 to get in, or it was just a logistical problem getting through the security for the event. But in any event, we've seen this happen two times. It has never happened to Hillary, and it's kind of disingenuous for you to come up with an answer to a question that was asked, you know, a couple of days ago. It's akin to an open book. I really don't want to hear what her answer is on the particular question that was asked to Bernie Sanders. But for me, you know, seeing how movements have been co-opted from, in my lifetime, the Civil Rights Movement, the Black Lives Movement, Occupy, and going for, you know, all of the movements that have come about, because anything that is seen to empower the masses automatically has to be radical and revolutionary. That's what they want you to think. And I started thinking about it, and I was like, what's the best way to get rid of one of the two movements that have a potential to energize both sides of a very significant voting bloc, the Black vote, particularly the Black female vote, the most coveted demographic of the Black vote, and also Black Lives Matter and getting rid of the Bernie Revolution, because the Bernie Revolution is pulling the white female voters that Hillary needs. So why not discredit them with one swoop? Get some folks who don't know no better. And I love my sisters, but I really, the sisters who showed up, I don't know what your plot, what your plan was, but either you got paid to do that, or somebody whispered some lullabies in your ears, or we need to talk to you and educate y'all, because y'all did it all. Well, you did it all wrong, but here's the thing. You actually gave Bernie a gift, because now people are talking about Bernie Sanders. Now people are curious about Bernie Sanders. Now people are asking questions.
The last couple of days, Black folks really haven't, you know, if you look over the last couple of weeks, you know, the increase of Black people asking questions about Bernie Sanders has went up. I mean,
he's responded beautifully. And his campaign has responded beautifully.
For me, you both were volunteering, you know, trying to help get the word out to African Americans. And I have people all the time coming to me now saying, hey, I know you support Sanders. Tell me why.
What's up with
because
that?
Because you know me, know that I have I'm very, very funny about who I choose to back.
And you can't get burned sometimes. It's just like
love. Yeah,
and,
you know, I got burned sometimes, but I'm very particular about the reasons I will support you. Well, being that the case, I automatically don't bandwagon. You know, it's been a couple of times I don't been in, because, you know, in 2008, I was an early supporter of Barack Obama. And I was still a Republican then, people, and I still was an early supporter of Barack Obama. I mean, going into this, you know, to a lot of different races, you know, whether they've been local, you know, sometimes I support the, you know, incumbent because the incumbent really is the best choice. Sometimes, you know, and I'm railing against the challenger because the challenger is a dumbass. And if you know, if you're a child, if you've ever been a challenger in a race that you know I've been working in and I called you and I just said dumbass, yeah, I meant that. So, yeah, take that to the bank. That's why I didn't support you because you was a dumbass. So, I mean, for real, for real. And then sometimes I just look at a candidate and be like, you know what, you just too greasy. You too greasy.
You know?
You greasy. You greasy from the hill. And I mean, so my thing is that, you know, I support Black Lives Matter. I'm an African-American man. I have problems with driving now because I ain't going to tell nobody no lie. I'm scared of the police. And I'm scared of them. Particularly after my little incident in Millersville last year, I don't want to fool with you because I already feel some type of way that how that whole thing went down. And considering the fact that, you know, the whole stop started off with I smell alcohol and nobody had not been drinking. And it would have never gotten known by nobody if a white man had not been in the car with me. I mean, there's been no alcohol seen for days, yet he smelled alcohol. So my question is always, you know, this Black Lives Matter movement, how do we get what we want? Because a lot of movements do it. A lot of these protest movements do a lot of yelling, hollering, and screaming. But yet never do anything.
Which is justified. But wait a minute. The anger is justified. Sometimes the action can be helpful if they're part of an overall strategy. But here's the problem. Black Lives Matter is a lot like Occupy, and I was with Occupy Atlanta. And I kind of see the same dynamic at play here. Because when you have these leaderless movements, you know, people are like, well, you need to invite the Black Lives Matter activists. It's like anonymous, you know. And, you know, anybody can pretty much pick up and say, I'm a Black Lives Matter activist, you know. And there is some who are organizations who are under there.
Right.
You know, it's very easy for someone to do that. And when you have an organization like that, it's also very easy to infiltrate. But that power can be used in a way because they're part of the whole army. You know, you need people, the digital army. You need the boots on the ground. You need the wonks. You need the geeks who like to do research and opposition research. You need all of those components, and not everybody's going to want to do the same thing. But we all tend to get in this, well, you don't want to do what I want to do, so you can't come to my birthday party. And then we just fall apart because the left, we love anarchy. We really do. If you've ever been part of any organization, we love anarchy. And for someone like me, you know, I stroke out at these organizational meetings. You know,
we got us a caller. So let's visit this caller. Let's see what the caller is doing. This one looks familiar. Hello, caller. You can tell us who you are and tell
me
what you're
thinking. Hi, this is Rena. I'm Progressive Black Thinkers. How are you?
Hello, Rena. How are you doing?
I'm good. I just saw your post, so I'm not really sure where you are in the conversation. But, you know, I saw that you were going to be discussing feminism and women's rights to choose, and I had to get in on that conversation.
Well, I'm glad you called because, you know, as a sister and I got some things to say about that, so since we got you on the phone, let me ask you, because I have been around some of the white feminist movement here in Atlanta, and I feel really discombobulated. I feel like I don't belong. You know, I feel like, you know, they're like, well, all I hear is, you know, abortion, you know, contraception, which I'm down with that. That's part of the reproductive justice platform. But I feel that the black, whenever I say, well, let's talk about, you know, mass incarceration, because we're trying to keep our, our, our men, our sisters, our brothers, you know, our children at home. You know, let's talk about education, because to me, that is all feminist in nature too. And when I bring it up, it's like they just look at me and go, abortion, and we won the right to vote in 1920. And I'm like, no, y'all won the right to vote in 1920. We didn't. We still struggling. So have you, what are your thoughts? What have you come across in your white feminism?
Black men won the right to vote before white women did, actually.
Right.
So that's one thing that we have to kind of be clear on is the history. You know, the other part of that, too, is we start talking about the right women's right to choose. And the rhetoric that's going around now, especially in the black community, about abortion is, you know, killing babies and all that. I mean, a lot of that stuff is just inflated propaganda. And we got to, I think, be real careful about sending black women backwards into a time where you had a tremendous amount of poverty. Black women right now, our median wealth in this country is $100. Okay, so that's the first thing. All right, so you have a huge swath of one group that is living in poverty. One of the main reasons that they're living in poverty is because their women don't have equal pay across the board. And black women get paid even less than white women do. And then you also have these same women now having to divide whatever income they have with children. And because you have, at this point, maybe like a 72% rate of single parenthood amongst black women, you're really talking about a disastrous situation if choice is taken away. Because back at the time before, you know, I hear a lot of talk about Margaret Sanger and, oh, she was, you know,
a geneticist
and all this stuff. But we have to understand a lot more about that. And I think a lot of people need to really go and read these papers that she has. I was going to try to actually, when I go back to New York, and get those papers from, because they're in NYU's library. And I'm an NYU alumna, so I wanted to go and get those papers because I'm hearing a lot of just inflammatory comments about it. But whatever Margaret Sanger's position was, we have to really be clear. Black women were the ones who were dying the most as a result of wire hanger abortions, back alley abortions, not having access to medical care, not having access to people who were competent and who could give them sterile environments in order to have abortions. You know, that was the highest rates of death happened amongst black women. So if you're going to start talking about genocide, you better start looking at that before you start talking about taking away choice.
Right.
Because
and
you
I
have
agree
a lot,
with you.
You have a lot of these black women now who are don't have a real sense of self-worth and self-value, self-esteem. They're being coerced constantly into sexual activity because they're impoverished. So you have a lot of black men who are preying on these women in these poor communities, getting sex from them. I mean, I keep hearing this whole thing about, oh, well, she shouldn't have chose him. No, there's no choosing going on. These guys are choosing these women to prey on, and they know exactly who to go after, and we all know this. So, you know, it's just very weird to me, these kind of conversations that I hear, as if we could say this stuff is cyberspace, but we don't know that this stuff goes on every day, right? You know, so, you know, these women are being preyed on. They don't have resources. There's no real medical resources for them, which, you know, places like Planned Parenthood and these other centers provide mostly medical care. You know, only 3% of their activity is abortion. You know, so you're getting low-cost access to medical care, reproductive health care, birth control options, all of that. And, you know, these people who are out here talking about we need to shut these places down, they're doing that not because they're concerned about genocide. They're doing that because they want to control the bodies and sexuality of black women. That's what
this whole thing is about.
That's what it's really about. So anybody that's saying, "Oh, well, I'm concerned about it. I'm pro-life and all of that," they're full of it. They're not pro-life, you know, because those people that are the first ones to send people off to war. They're the first ones to talk about the death penalty. They're the first ones that want guns. So how are they pro-life?
Right. And then the child becomes a problem because then that child, it's the child's fault that your parents weren't born rich and you need to earn your way. So we're going to cut, you know, once that child is born, and pro-life is a very, very, it's an oxymoron. You're pro-birth. Because once
and not only that,
before,
but you're filtering
really
these kids. These kids are being filtered directly into the prison industry because they're being born into poverty.
Right.
You know,
and that's where the intersectionality matters. When we, okay, because when you started out, it was all about reproductive justice, and then boom, there you go. You made the connection into the prison industrial complex. And criminal justice reform and the school to prison pipeline and everything all that encompasses. But when a lot of black women go with white organizations, white feminist organizations, it's mostly the reproductive justice platform that's talked about, and we don't hear from them unless they're coming after Planned Parenthood. Well, I have, you know, I live in an area where I've seen those billboards. There is a organization that has a van that you know, the ones that say they give free ultrasounds and free pregnancy tests and, you know, those pregnancy crisis things. And I have begged some of the white organizations because they park at a Family Dollar in Atlanta off of Cleveland Avenue and Metropolitan Parkway, and they park there, and they are promoting an agenda, and I beg them. You know, I've seen the protesters out on Old National protesting abortion, you know, trying to shut it down. And you tell them, when I go to the white organizations, they go like, it's basically, yeah, that's like really messed up. And then they turn around, well, come with us and do this, and we're going to march on Washington. No, I need for you to see this. I need for you to hear this. I need for you to feel me. I need for you to encompass my struggle because you want me to work with yours, and that's how it should be. But I don't hear enough of that, and it's very, very frustrating. You know, for me, it's like, am I a feminist? And I just say, I don't know. You know, if you're going
well,
to...
Well, you know, I need to kind of say something about that, too, if I can, because...
Okay, talk me down, sister.
I think we have to understand that black women invented feminism. Feminism is not a white invention. You know, if we look at any kind of protest movement, direct action movement, organized demonstrations, and, you know, anything that's happened throughout history that comes, you know, as a result of patriarchal and white oppression, all of those movements were created by black people and designed and orchestrated and put together, you know, constructed by black people. And white people, other groups have always followed suit. They've always followed the model created by black people. But for some reason, you know, when it comes down to feminism, we are supposed to believe that black women now are suddenly following and copying white women. And that's just not true. You know, we are the ones that created that whole model. If you look at what Flo Kennedy and Dorothy Pittman Hughes and all these women were doing, black women have been involved in these movements going all the way back to the 1800s in this country. There's a book called Words of Fire.
Let me chime in for a second here because as a man, I'm looking at it from the outside in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, black feminism to me has always been so drastically different from what I've seen when you, as Stacey said earlier, from white feminism. Because, see, to me, when I think of the word feminist, I'm thinking of everything that encompasses what it means to be a woman. Okay? And so when you talk about black feminism, like Stacey said earlier, we start talking about you know, education, things that deal with children and deal with our community, because African-American community, whether or not we want to admit it or not, is not necessarily a patriarchal society. It has always been
well, it
primary.
Is actually a patriarchal society.
It has always been patriarchal.
Well, I have to agree with you on that, because the black community is definitely patriarchal. It is run by the Christian
mm-hmm.
church. It's run by Islam.
Mm-hmm.
It's run by black male politicians. It's run by black male-centered grassroots organizations. All the Panther Party, all of these different groups have always been male-centered.
Mm-hmm. I have to disagree with that, because
that's the history.
Like,
I mean, you know.
If you look into the black family and you actually get down to the crux and you do a 5-Y analysis and you break it back to who was really in control, it has always been, it always comes back to mama. Even if you go to the preacher and you go back, find the first lady. She is the man that's directing it. If you go back to the black businesses, back down back to the black woman and his wife.
That may be anecdotal, but that's not true. And the reason why I'll tell you that that's not true is because black women are some of the foremost advancers of patriarchy there is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So they enforce and reinforce notions of patriarchy even within family constructs.
Even in that notion, if the women are advancing the notion, then even in that setting, it's the women who are leading. If the women are the ones
advancing. That's like saying that you're working at, you know, a white corporation and you're advancing the white corporation's agenda, but so that now your black people are leading? No, you're not. You're just advancing an agenda that's been put forth by white people. That doesn't now make you the leader. That just makes you somebody who's perpetuating and propagating whatever it is that their agenda is. So this is the same thing that's happening with black women. You have black women all in these churches bowing to a male god.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're talking about Jesus all the time. They're bowing to Allah. They're always constantly perpetuating a black male dominated agenda. So
right,
that's not true.
Right. And so look at the structure of the civil rights movement. How many people don't know that it was actually the women behind the movement and the word behind that actually powered that movement, but who were the front people?
Right,
you know,
and the black women teachers are the ones that organized the Montgomery bus boycott. But you don't know anything about them because, you know, black movements have always been male-centered. Black history is black male history. You know, it's very difficult for people to even name any black, they come up with the names of 5 black women, you know, in any of these movements. It's very challenging for black people to come up with that because we're always talking about Malcolm and Martin and, you know, whatever other male you could come up with. But, you know, most of the time you only hear about, you know, Rosa Parks, you know, and maybe, you know, Sodom, maybe.
You might hear Fannie Lou Hamer every now and then.
Right,
every once in a while you'll hear that Ella
right.
Baker. You know, you'll hear a
right.
couple of names.
But, you know,
but,
most people
you know,
don't know anything about Anna Julia Cooper. They don't know anything about the Colored Women's Club. They don't know anything about, you know, like I said, we have a long history. And, you know, we are the ones that created these. When white women were living in, like, this Ozzie and Harriet existence, they didn't know anything about organized protests and all that. They learned from, worked for, studied under black women. There's a film called Makers where you have white women in there telling you, I learned from these black women that I actually worked for them. And, you don't know this history because they don't, you know, most people don't even read anything. If you ask black people, well, you know, I hear these guys online all the time saying, well, black feminism, these feminists, they, you know, they believe this and they're this, that. And the only thing I ask them is, well, tell me, like, what book have you read on black feminism? And you get nothing because they haven't read anything.
And this is the thing, though. You said that the first, and I hear this a lot from academics all the time. Everything comes down to, excuse me, a book. But
you have to read. You to know what you're talking about. I'm not going to have a discussion with you on biology, and if you're going to tell me about biology and all of that, and you haven't read any books on it, I mean, that doesn't even make any sense.
look, I'm an avid reader, but books are always slanted to the view of the author. But if you go out and you actually do in the field observations of what you're looking at, that's how most books are written anyway, is by people taking observations and transferring them to words. But if you're going out there and you're doing your observations, all observations don't match what's in the book. We've looked at history books in America for 400 years and it's given us the observation that the white man is superior. But what it is,
okay,
and
so
that's the
books
thing
written by black men, though, are valid, right? Is that what you're saying? Because, you know, if you look at the books like Sheik Anta Diop and, you know, all of these black male writers, you're going to tell me that they're, you know, now not valid just because they wrote them and they were black male?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that some of the observations that we see, and this is not a blanket statement, this is just like the observation I was just giving you earlier about me believing that black women are actually the leaders in our community. It's not because it's just like democracy. Democracy is a people-led movement, bottom up. That's the way it's supposed to be done. Okay? Now, if a man is being used as a front to push an agenda, that may be the case. It's been done before where you've used people to front a certain agenda for you, because I grew up in a family that, you know, there's a lot of men, but at the end of the day, the women, and we are very tightly knit, strong family, but our women have a very, very loud voice. Not meaning loud as in volume, but they are heard. And I've seen in the community around me where the women have been heard and the men have moved based on what those women said. It's not
and
been the men that are going to do this, or the men going to do it. The men have said, we're going to do this. The men say, this is how it's going to go. If the women say, you're going to go do.
But
and
what
the
were those
say,
women
okay,
talking about? So my question to you is, you know, if you're looking at these women in these families that are saying, you know, that you are, they're perpetuating this whole idea of, you know, Jesus is going to save us, and, you know, we're going to have to go to church, and these are the things that these women are saying. They're still perpetuating patriarchy. They're not talking about, okay, well, we're going to run this, you know, from a woman-centered point of view. You know, they may be the ones that may have had the loudest voices or whatever, but let them start talking about feminism, then what happens? So, you know, that's what I'm saying. You're not really perpetuating, you know, you're not really, you know, promoting women and women's empowerment just because women's voices are involved in those family structures, because if that was the case and women had all this power, then the median wealth of black women wouldn't be $100. It doesn't make any sense. Like, you have to show, you know,
okay.
Like,
the median wealth of the African American woman is, but what is the median wealth for the African American man?
Well, it's much higher than black women.
But this is the case. If you're looking in our community, I think we got a lot of things going on here. Because from what I'm hearing, I'm listening to you both, right? And I get you, my sister, about, you know, about religion and how it is based. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you pray to Sky Dad. You know, no matter what religious discipline you practice, that it leads to the male. Everything started with
that
the male.
That is humanistic, right.
Right, okay? So I feel you on that. But that's religion. But when black women, particularly, you know, going through it back, you know, maybe two generations ago, and I think women to this day, the reason why there's a difference between religion and faith. Faith is what kept our back strong. Now, whether we agree with it, the concept of it, and I'm with you where I kind of reject religion because of that patriarchal structure. I do believe in faith, because faith is the thing that keeps me from catching a case. Faith is the thing that keeps me keep going. So I really can't be angry at women at that, but there are some women who have been heads of the household and that who have run things and who have held it down. We've seen it then, we've seen it now. I mean, that has been our reality since slavery, making a way out of no way. We were forced to do that. So we have had strong women, and I kind of get your point on that, Scout. But, Scout, you have to understand that how the environment that you grew up in and how you were raised you are an you know, you're different than most of what we see, because we see men who come with that macho swagger, you know, my woman needs to do this, dinner better be ready when I get home, this and that, and that's, and you know, the kids need to be clean, this and that. And that's part of the problem. We hold up half the sky. It doesn't tell you which part of the sky. We hold up half the sky. So we work in a partnership. Doesn't matter what role, who does what. But here's the problem I have with white feminism, and this is something that we get feedback a lot. It's, see, and I've talked to some feminism. You just bring up the word man, and they start foaming at the mouth. You know,
right.
Men this, men that, and they bash men. And here I am. I want to be a feminist, but I feel like I can't call myself a feminist because, you know what, I love my black men. I love men, period.
Well, that's why I said if you understand black feminism and you study that and you understand intersectionality, then you will understand that patriarchy itself is the most damaging construct to the black male body there is.
The, right.
That same, understand, that same construct that these black males are perpetuating are is, in fact, what results in them being shot down in the street by a white cop. You know, because their
mm-hmm.
whole understanding of aggression and might makes right, and I got
and
the gun, therefore I'm right. That whole construct is what it is. That's killing
are
them.
You Scout, are you understanding what we're saying? Are you feeling
yeah,
what we're saying?
Because it makes sense. It makes sense because if the white man believes that paternity, you know, that men rule the world, then if we're the enemy, we become the black man automatically becomes the target. I've always understood that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So if you understand black feminism embraces the idea that all of us, in order to survive, have to look at all of the forms of oppression that exist, whether it be capitalist
exactly.
oppression, patriarchal oppression, you know, oppression around gender, around whatever it is, they all
mm-hmm.
intersect, you know, imperialism,
exactly.
war, you know, the military-industrial complex. I mean, it's no, they're not separate and apart from each other. This is what black feminism dictates. And that's why I say it's vital that black women and black men, instead of saying, oh, you know, stigmatizing the word feminism itself, understand the history. Because like I said, if you don't read the books and know, you know, what the concepts are and understand where black feminism is coming from, you'll just immediately write it off because it's some nonsense somebody put on a meme or a YouTube video. You have to read and be knowledgeable about what black, and that's why you said, you know, oh, I'm frustrated because these white feminists are doing this, that, and the third. Well, you know, if we're the ones that invented feminism, right, you know, and you could go online and see Gloria Steinem even saying, black women invented feminism. You can look, Google it. It'll come up, you know. Like, that's a fact, right? Then if you let any other race come along and take what's yours and distort it, then you are allowing that to go on. It is your responsibility as a black woman, and even as black people, it is our responsibility not to allow that to happen and to bring it back to an understanding of how it addresses oppression in whatever form it comes in. You know, it's not,
okay,
we hate men. That's not what black feminism is about.
Right,
you know,
and that's what some white feminists are very, very, they're like, you know, you just, if you love men, then you can't be a feminist. And I'm not saying all of them do it, but there are some factions of the white feminist movement.
Well, I mean, that's like, you know, look at the animal rights groups, right? You know, everybody's
right.
down with that. You know, people were upset about the lion being killed, you know, rightfully so. Yeah, you know, that's not cool. But then you have groups that are radical animal rights groups
right.
that go out and blow stuff up and all of that, right? So you're always going to have factions that take stuff to, you know, whatever kind of extreme
but
and all of that.
But it detracts and it hurts the movement because
right, but that's not,
as people who are exposed, hear me out, as people
mm-hmm.
are exposed and there are, you know, people who really aren't on to feminism on a certain intellectual level. For the average
but that's
person,
not my. That's not that's our responsibility to not allow people to stigmatize an entire history of, you know, centuries of work from black women that have has gone on, you know, we cannot allow that to be defined now and to be stigmatized and to be, you know, looked at, painted with this broad brush by a group of white women. You know, it's incredible. That's like saying that we would let, you know, now the civil rights movement, because you got some white people now that are talking about Occupy, you know, they'll now be the ones that define civil rights in America. Everybody would be up in arms if they said something like that, right? And like,
right.
You know, what are you talking about? That's not, well, that's
but
the
that's
same thing with feminism.
Why
are you letting white women define that? You know,
and that's the point, and that's the reason why these conversations need to be had. Because for the average black woman who is not exposed to the information that you and I may be privy to or have read and disseminated, this is what they see, and this is what they
right.
come in contact with. And I see this as moving more women away from feminists because, like I said in the beginning, I'm kind of hesitant to say it because it seems like I'm required to meet a certain checklist that if I say one thing I'm not down with, well, you're not a feminist, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'll be
well,
that.
Then you, then
but
then
I
your
still
response
stand for this,
your
that,
response
that.
Then should be your response. You know, like a white woman said that to me, you know, my response would be like, well, first of all, black women invented feminism, so now you tell me about the history that you know about in terms of our role in that. And then you could talk to me about who's a feminist here.
Well,
so, you know,
you
got to redirect,
I don't like
you
to
know.
Get, but this is me and my type of personality. I really don't like to get caught up in the semantics of things. There's an old mother
right.
with saying that says it doesn't matter what you call but what you choose to answer to. I kind of live
but yeah,
by
but,
that. If you
but
want
the thing
to
is, it's like, let a white person go and put out a film about ancient Egypt and put all white actors in it, and there's boycotts all over the web, right? Everybody's like, no, we're going to shut this down, right? So why aren't black women doing the same thing? Why are you allowing people to redefine your specific history? This is your history. This is your history as a black woman. Why are you letting somebody take that? Why are you letting somebody run with that? You know, why are you letting somebody come in and run roughshod all over your own history? Because black women don't know their own history. That's the problem.
Right, right.
And that's why
right.
those books are necessary.
I was watching on C-SPAN, too, last weekend. There was a panel on African-American identity. And there was, I think it was at NYU last week. I'm not sure, but it was in the New York area. And one of the things one of the panelists was saying is that all of this revisionist history that takes place, and they got to talking about Sojourner Truth and some of the misconceptions of what she actually said and actually did, things that have been perpetuated down through time about, you know, her ripping her shirt open and her saying, I ain't a woman and all this stuff, which the author who was speaking at the time said those things were not actually said but were a paraphrase of some of the things that she had said over time and how constructs have been set forth to kind of give a more of a modern marketing capability to a historical figure. And so
well,
you
I mean, this
talking
is
about
why
this.
It's, right, and that's why I'm saying to you that the research is necessary. The books
right.
are necessary. You know, understanding what went on at that time in that era, what was going on at that time, how were people living? You know, I mean, I hear people say, "Oh, well, you know, feminism came along and destroyed the black family in the 70s, and that's why we're all
yes.
messed up." I mean, that's completely
yes.
insane. To even say something like that means that you have zero understanding of what was going on at that time in this country. You have zero understanding.
That was part of the propaganda that was put out there because it fit a particular political agenda. And
right.
You know,
and that's why I said you
to
have
say.
To understand the history. You know, and
right.
I just want to make a point clear about that because during that time you had the black men coming home from the Vietnam War, you had rampant poverty going on, you had huge amounts of domestic violence rates in the black community. You had the manufacturing base of the country actually leaving. So all of these urban areas that black people had moved into from the South, they had moved there in order to get these jobs and to work at these plants and these factories. They were shutting down. So there was no work. Mm-hmm. So you had all of these men, like, leaving. And you've even seen, you know, stories about, oh, well, I'm going to leave and see if I can find work. You and the baby stay here. You know, that kind of, that was going on. Because there was no work. Like, everybody was dependent on the work in the town. You know, once the factory closed, the plant closes, right, there's no work. So this is what was going on, because the manufacturing base in the entire country was decimated. So you had this whole thing going on. You had the use of heroin, right, which was also spread and rampant, you know. I mean, we saw American Gangster, right, you know. So you had all of these things combining to have a devastating effect on black family structure. And all of that is completely overlooked, and now it's blamed on feminism, when the vast majority of black women were not even feminists. It's insane.
They wait for their husbands to come back. And, you know, I remember my grandfather during the 70s left his family in South Georgia. And he went to Alaska for like 5 or 6 years to work on the oil pipeline.
Yeah. A lot of people have stories like that.
And there was some effect to that in the way the family came together. And a lot of you can't blame it. That's why I was talking about the observations that take place versus the book. You got to put both together. You got to have field work plus the academics. And a lot of what I was trying to say earlier was that I know a lot of people who focus everything they do off of a book. And I will read, when I read, the first thing I want to do is what did I just read, and how can I apply or observe it in the real world?
Which is what you should do.
Right,
and I agree with that.
Right.
I agree with that, but I also think that there's too much of the observational part on what people see or anecdotal things, and not enough study. That's the problem right now, is that there's no study. There's no book reading. There's not, you know, nobody's reading anything, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the problem. Everybody's getting their info from a YouTube video or something, you know, from somebody with an agenda. You know, like, that's crazy. Like, you got to know what you're talking about. You know, or, I mean, it's like these people are spreading this misinformation all over the place, stigmatizing, like I said, black women, stigmatizing your history, okay? And then when you get ready to go and actually participate in something or speak out against issues that are important, you know, or speak up for situations that are important to your survival, right away you're slammed or you're shut down, or you must be a feminist. Like, that's a bad thing to be. You know, when anybody says that to me, I say, you're damn right I'm a feminist. I'm very proud to be. You know, Asada Shakur is a feminist. You know, Coretta Scott King was a feminist. Ella Baker was a feminist. You know, all these black women, I'm in good company. So, yeah, you know, Angela Davis is a feminist. You know,
and
right?
You say it like,
so,
it's,
you know,
that bell hook.
Bell hook's a feminist. Like, well, you know, what am
I
supposed to be upset because you're calling me that? You know, give me a break, you know. So,
who made that song? I'll be that. You know, I'm proud to be that. And, real quick, before you get off the line, I'm not trying to get you off the line, but how can we connect with you? Do you have any social media presences?
Yeah, I'm on Progressive Black Thinkers is my group, and also Misogyny Exposed is my group. If you go to Misogyny Exposed on Facebook, that's my group. So just, you know, go on there and, you know. But, yeah, I'm always on there and, you know, I think the real progressive black thinkers, not this other thing that this misogynist created, you know, but that stole my
name.
There's
some,
you know,
dark places on Facebook and in the internet, so we want to make sure to hook people up with the one, because I really am glad that you called in, and if anyone wants to join the conversation, 656-383-0995. I'm really, really glad we're having this discussion, because I get so frustrated, because some of the dynamics that I see that go on in feminism, I'm an activist and an organizer, and I see it in other movements, and you just get tired of it. It's like, are we doing this again? Really, people, are we doing this again? And, you
know,
if
I could suggest one book, I would just say to read you know, well, two actually. You know, Bell Hooks has a book called Feminism is for Everybody. But there's also a book called Words of Fire, an anthology of Black feminist thought. And you should get that book because it has the entire scope of history of Black women, like I said, going back to the 1800s, before Gloria Steinem was even born, you know, with Black women doing this kind of work. That one, I think, is just a vital book for everyone to read.
So everybody hit Amazon or go to your library, check that out.
It's on Amazon,
Google. I also like Angela Davis, Woman, Race, and Wild.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of them. And on Progressive Black Thinkers at the top of the page, I have a whole book list of all of these books on Black feminism that anybody could just go on there and read and you know, see what books there are. Because people need to read this history. It's really profound. I mean, it's like so many profound thinkers, and that's just some vast amount of work that, you know, most Black people, they think they know about Black history, and they don't even know about the history of half the population of Black people. Like, it's incredible to me,
and
you know.
History is always changing and evolving, so there's no way one can know everything about history.
Right.
The minute you stop learning about it, that's the day you're done. So, I thank you.
Read about Amy Garvey, not just Marcus Garvey. Read about Amy Garvey.
Ah, girl. Okay, that's it right there. I love you. I love you, woman. I never met you, but I love you.
Because I'm really
tired of hearing about it, and the discussion is really, really one that I think we need to be had and scout. I kind of knew it was going to be like this. Because
I got questions. I want answers. And, you know, that's the whole point.
Ask
being outside, you know, mainstream media is that usually what they're going to chase is stuff that's going to push ratings. We want to ask questions. And we want people to get involved in answering these questions because I'm sitting here, I'm a Black man, and I hear it all the time, Black feminism, white feminism. And, you know, just like we just had, I had my view of the world, she had hers. And these conversations need to take place because we have to find a balance in our community so that we can move forward. The Black man can't stay perpetually mad at the Black woman. The Black woman can't stay perpetually mad at the Black man. We can't allow outside forces to continue to come in and unbalance our community. We got to find that balance so we can move forward and start creating something that can actually participate in the American experience on a more equal footing.
Right. Because remember,
well, I would
we
say read,
about...
read go Google Understanding Patriarchy by Bell Hooks. Google that and read that, because she talks about how patriarchy actually is more harmful to Black men.
This is what
Black men don't get.
But it's,
they think
but
that
all
this
of this
is against
meant to
them.
Divide and
this
conquer.
Is helping them. You know?
But it's all meant to divide and conquer, to dilute your collective power. And this is just—it's a tactic that we've seen in other movements. I believe we're seeing it now on the political side. And, you know, we have such a greater access to information at our fingertips. We've got to start using it. We've got to start having conversations. We have to start respecting our differences and actually not just talking to each other but listening. And lots of times I feel that when I am with my white allies or my white feminist friends, that I'm kind of being patronized to, and like, yes, dear, you know, that's a cool story, but let's talk about this. So I'm very,
but see, that's what I'm saying about your responsibility. That's what I'm saying about your responsibility.
Right.
It's your
and
responsibility
I
to know that history. So when they start this nonsense, you're like, wait a minute, no. I'm the one that's in the position, you know, to talk, to look down at you and have you answer to me. You know, I'm
you
the
know
one
what?
That you got, whatever you're doing, you got from me, okay?
And you're
that's
absolutely right. But you know what? I fight all day, okay? I got 5 kids, a husband, and I'm an activist. I am fighting, and I'm on social media, And then, you know, here's the thing. Sometimes you get so tired of saying the same thing to the same people over and over, and you shut down. And I know that's wrong. I really know it's wrong. But in order for me to keep some sort of semblance of sanity, and so y'all don't see me doing a perp walk on the local news, I have to say, you know what? I just can't, and I won't. And I just go on and do the work because I'm all about the work. And that,
well,
but you're
as someone who has been out there and has done that kind of work for years, and, you know, I mean, I've led the all kinds of rallies and organized protests and the Persian Gulf War. I was the one that put that, you know, you saw that slogan, "Our war is here, not in the Persian Gulf." You know, I created that, you know, and then I led the rally, and, you know, when the women stood up and stopped the Mike Tyson parade in New York, I'm the one that organized that, you know, like, it's just like I've done that work. I will say to you to study more and put all of that stuff, you know, all that energy that you expend out there running around out in the street, put that into study, because you will not be effective without that. You know, I see a lot of women out there jumping in front of these tanks and everything. I don't see the guys doing that. I see the women doing that, and I see them out there really sacrificing themselves. And for people who don't even have their own interests at heart, really.
Okay,
you know.
Scout.
I got a question here. Why do you think the brothers are not out there?
Because they feel that, first of all, black women are allowing them to do that. You know, in my position is, you know, if you want to stand up out there in front of the police and all that stuff, then go out there and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
And let me know how it is that I could support your effort.
Mm-hmm.
I should not be the one organizing all of that, and then you take all the credit for it. This is in a tradition, like we were talking about the civil rights movement. You had all these black women doing all this work, right? And you got these guys standing up there. They ain't organizing nothing. The women are organizing everything. But that's why I said if you study more, you know the history, you know not to fall into that trap.
And we're in the Scout. You and I, but Scout, you see that happen right here in Atlanta with the movement.
Usually when you see an organizing event, and Stacy, see, you know, that me and Stacy met through, you know, me coming to different events. Usually I'm one of maybe 2-3 black men in the room.
Meeting, the PTA, the, you know, whatever it is, you know, you're going to see more women there, right? Because these issues directly affect us. You know, secondly, they also have more of an impact in terms of how it is that we feel, right? So, you know, we'll get emotional about these situations. You know, I don't want to be sexist about that, because I think black men are probably more emotional than any other people out here, which is why they shoot each other all the time. I know that's a controversial statement, but that's true. But black women will get out there and feel, like, compelled to be, you know, I got to, you know, do something, you know, instead of thinking
it.
And, you know, organizing strategically. And I think that needs to stop.
And you know, now I'm going to tell you again, this is just an observation of mine and how stuff has directly come at me. Okay, this is how it directly come at me. Now, I've always been, you know, when I walk into a room, the women, first of all, look at me like I'm out of place, that I should not be there. Like, why you're not at work somewhere? Like, I do work, but I took time off work today to come here. And the brothers look at me like, that's woman's business. And, you know, it's all of these so-called
gender. That's it right there.
That's the problem.
That was it right there. Number two, it's seen as women's business.
Right. And that's just not true. And that's why sisters need to take a step back and say, wait a minute, hold up. What am I doing out here running around in front of these tanks and M16s and everything? Where are y'all? You know,
right.
I mean, you can't even get them to come out to a rally when a black woman gets killed by a cop. But when a black man gets killed by a cop, here come everybody, and it's mostly women. What is that about? That's what I'm talking
right.
about when I'm talking about black women advancing patriarchy. They will, in fact, you know, stand up more for male-centered things. So even though you see this presence of women, what are they standing up for? You know, this is why I said we have to really rethink what we're doing. You know, black women have to really start reading and...
You know, you look at that and you'd be like, okay. And I mean, I've even been dogged out myself by women for being in there because I guess they have that say, like you said, you know, I'm connecting that dot now, you know, the patriarchal system that, you know, and I've seen it, that you got women who, and other families' businesses, because I got a relative. And the woman in the house does majority of the working because her husband is, you know, he has some medical issues, and he stays at home, and he takes care of the kids. They kind of traditional roles, okay? He does the PTA. He does the running off behind kids, doctor's appointments, this, that, and the other. And she's out working, and she actually works in a factory. And you have people in their business telling them, hey, girl, you need to go get you a real man that's going to go out work so you can stay at home and this, that, and the other.
Why I said women are the ones that perpetuate the patriarchal model even more, you know.
Because
and that's why the black women have to stop thinking like that, you know.
They define those roles.
Yeah.
You know,
they bully other women into those roles. You know, how many times have you seen black women bully other black women into church? You know, they bully them into it.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
I look at the gender roles for me, when I think about feminism in the States, let's tell you, as we were discussing this show a couple of weeks ago, that was my biggest issue because I'm looking at gender roles, okay?
Right.
And it's like, if you are a feminist and you're trying to deconstruct traditional gender roles, why is it that it's okay that you assume my gender role, and but yet I can't assume yours? If we're gonna be gender neutral, how about the person who does it best do the job?
Because
those
women that are doing that are not feminist.
But they claim feminism.
But they're not. That's what I'm saying.
Because
I said you have to really think about, you know, what it is, you know, because there should be no such thing as a role. First of all,
if you're the one that's
the better cook, then you cook. You know, if I'm the one to be able to make more money, then I'm going to make them. I mean, you know, it's not about a role. It's about the individual and their capabilities.
Right.
You
it's
know,
a partnership, and if you find a role that you are better suited to, you know, my husband, he makes one hell of a breakfast. You know, he cooks, and he has helped out with childcare. That's how we say when I was working full time and the kids were young. That's how we saved on childcare. He worked nights, I worked days. Actually, it was kind of good. We had a great marriage because we only saw each other on the weekend. But you know, it was basically we needed to get this done, and it didn't matter. You know, my husband, he knows how to clean the toilet like I do. I know how to go out there. I can hang drywall with the best of them. So it's a
partnership. I saw something the other day where somebody had said, you know, when a woman is taking care of the kids, she's just being a parent. When the father's taking care of the kids, he's babysitting. No, you're not babysitting.
How do you babysit your own kids?
You're being a parent.
How do you babysit your
own
kids?
Yeah, this is the language, right? This is the language that we have ingrained into our psyches about, you know. These roles, you know, it's just ridiculous, you know. So that's why I said, you know, that's what feminism, that's what black feminism really addresses, is how it is that we can survive across the board, you know, and stop, you know, perpetuating this patriarchal construct that's killing everybody, that's killing the planet, that's killing nature, that's killing Africa, that's killing women, that's killing, you know, it's like kill.
It's like Raid. You ever look at a can of Raid, it says it kills. And that's
But then
so
they'll start talking about taking away choice and abortion, you know, take that away, but they're not gonna talk about the guys, well, why don't you just keep your pants zipped so
you don't
have any issues. They're not gonna deal
and
with
you
that.
Know, and then you see all these commercials for Viagra. I'm telling y'all ladies, get with me.
Exactly.
I wanna follow civil suit because you got men who are subverting nature.
if you used it and you lost it, you shouldn't be able to get it back. I can't. So
Look, whenever that time comes, I'm gonna say it was a good run. I appreciate it. It's time to go do this. Cause I find
right,
I get more done when I'm not trying to get some. So hey, for real,
right,
I get more done.
We got these old players walking around. Hey, girl, and it's like,
right.
No. So
and
you
preying
know,
on these
you
young women
about,
that don't have
right.
money.
Right,
but
because we see the expectation that comes from that.
But then with that,
right.
you know, since we're talking about feminism and women and these changing roles and whatnot, man, as a man, and you know, I was single for a moment there, and I'm putting myself back in with the young folks, so I'm getting cuffed again. But I found out without being out there, after being off the market for 15 years, that women were very over-aggressive in chasing men. I'm watching women get on, you know, it's not cute.
Well, who do we learn that from? Who do we
right.
get that from?
I mean, it's very male, and it's a very male feeling when a woman comes up and talks to you, like, hey, Charlotte, what you doing? And I'm like, what?
Right, because
really?
because these girls, you have the past maybe two generations of girls that have grown up under rap, under, you know, this whole... you know, rappers, gangster rap mentality, and so they now view power as being acting in aggression. You know,
right?
That's you know what they've been taught and then socialized into believing that you know being aggressive equals power.
Right, and even from
they're
coming out there like that. And you know, earlier when you were talking about how you know the guys are preying on the females And I will agree that there are men out there who go and say, hey, we're going to ride over here to the projects. You know, I got money, and these chicks like money, and da-da-da-da-da. Your money in your car is the extension of your penis. We understand. As a man, I understand that. Then use that trick myself. But at the same time. But at the same time, I see a role reversal taking place when we're talking about women choosing men. If I was a woman, and I've seen you out there, and you walk around with your pants hanging out off of your butt. You have no job. All you do is sit on the corner and look cute every day. You would be the last joker I would deal with. But you'd be like, oh, girl, me and him have babies. Particularly them jokers, them little cute jokers with, you know, that can grow hair and the hair kind of slick. I ain't going to use the term good hair because I hate that term, but they have a different grade of hair than the rest of us Negroes. They go, oh, girl, we're going to have cute babies. Girl. Yeah, y'all going to have cute babies. Girl, it's not going to be cold.
But that is why I said that the women are perpetuating patriarchy. And
mm-hmm.
that needs to stop because
that
they're the ones that are telling them, oh, go get him. He's cute. Okay. And not really giving different criteria, you know, for what it is that you have. I mean, I've heard, you know, black mothers say, oh, he only hit you once. You know, you better stick with that man. He got a good job, you know, or whatever. Like, you know, you need to go and you need to get with him and get what you could get from him instead of, you know, telling this girl to go to school and be an engineer, you know, like so she could
right.
take care of herself. You know, it's like, oh,
right.
you better go get that man. You better, you know, like this is the stuff that we keep socializing our daughters into. Right? So you keep putting
mm-hmm.
that out there, and this is what you're going to get, you know. So, you know, we say, oh, this is he's cute, blah, blah, blah. He's cute. So this is what this girl grows up with. She's looking at these music videos. She's looking at, you know,
right.
this thug thing as being, you know, the thing to get, you know, to be attracted
get money.
To. Right, get
you
money. You know,
that,
all of this
we
stuff
heard
is ingrained
it, you know,
into the
right.
psyche of these girls, right? And then you
my
turn around and go, well, why
is
she acting like that? Well, that's why
she's
want. Acting like that. You know, I mean, come on.
Right. Now, we all know the power of the P and what it can do, but, you know, I mean, that is, you know, I remember my grandmother once, I had, you know, I was talking about, you know, I need some money, right? And she was like, and I was talking about, I'm broke. And she looked at me and she said, girl, a woman ain't never broke. You sitting on your
right.
money. And I was like, oh, wow. Huh? You know, first that my grandmother said it, and then it was like, oh, wow, are you, like, suggesting? And she
yep.
was like, I'm just saying.
She was suggesting.
And then we're told you got to do what you got to do.
Because
you
they
know,
grew
sometimes
up at
you got to do what you got to do.
They grew up at a time where they had no choice but to be dependent
but
on
to do that.
Because they didn't have access and opportunity to go to school or get a degree or to, you know, it's like, you know, I'm talking to young sisters, whatever. I'm saying, okay, so what grad school are you going to? See, this is what we need. These are the conversations we need to be having. You know, do you want
to
be, you know, a construction worker so you can make as much, you know, do air conditioning and plumbing so you can make, you know, $40, $50 an hour like these guys are making? You know, what? Where are those conversations? You know what I mean?
Right,
like, we're not having those conversations. This is the problem.
Right. Because when you hear young girls where their prime ambition, you know, because of watching, you know, what they see in the media, some of these young girls, their prime ambition, I'm going to find me, you know, an up-and-coming rapper like Drake or somebody, and I'm going to have this baby. And, you know, when they think
or some basketball
when you
player,
think you're hitting
you know.
Right, I'm going to be a basketball player. I got to put it out there. I know I'll get hate for it. I hate Basketball Wives. I hate all of those shows. Real Housewives of Atlanta. I don't understand when did a black woman's pain become entertainment. I can't stand those shows. I'm not hating on it. If you want to watch,
it's always been entertainment.
Them, but,
it's been entertainment.
Well, it's not even entertainment.
McDaniel.
It's you know,
it's,
I just don't get it. And
black
so,
women's
and
pain
I think,
has always been entertainment. Since
you know
Hattie
what?
McDaniel won Gone with
that's
the
true.
Oscar for Gone with the Wind. I mean, you know, like, that's not new.
That's
but
true.
What we have to do is we have to be able to differentiate and say, okay, that's television. You know, that's cute and that's fun and that's fine. But now, you know, let me go and see if I can get into Columbia next year. Like, you know, like this is what I'm saying. Like, why are we not having these conversations with our daughters as single mothers, as, you know, people in the community, as, you know, women who I know a woman that's a biologist, and, you know, we're talking about her starting a nonprofit. I said, you need to set that up and get these black girls into science and math, because this is where, you know, all these Indians and stuff, they're making all this money, right? You know,
let's hold on for a second there. Let's get all of our children, because, see, I'm going to tell you, as a black man, I'm not even promoted to go into science, math, and engineering. I am told to go pick up a ball, go run the ball.
Yeah, but we're not talking about black men right now. Men. We are talking about black girls. Women across the board, girls across the board, whatever race they are, once they hit seventh grade, because they're always the top of the class in math when they're in elementary school, right? Once they hit seventh grade, they're redirected out of that into other things, because the engineers and the people who are mostly male, and they're making the most money. And that's what
and
we have to kind of deal with is
and
girls.
Scout, you got to remember, when we're talking about feminism, it's just like the whole debate between Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter. We're talking about black women matter.
Right.
That's
right.
It's the same
but
kind
of
thing.
You have to talk about. That's one of the things you have to deal with, though, because the other side of the issue has always been, when you got a movement, who is the dominating person, who's the dominating group beforehand feels like something is being taken away from them and set to give to the other group. That's about where we find the balance at. Because, you know, that men, we seen when we was at the Bernie rally and it went the kickoff, there are men who call themselves feminists. How do we find that balance?
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
I just got the 90-second mark. So great conversation. I think at some point in time there need to be something we need to do a series on this whole thing.
Oh, Lord, here we go. See? Y'all get him started, and then after the show's over, he's calling me up, and he's throwing stuff out, and I'm writing it down, you know, okay, and we're trying to figure this out. So y'all just blew the rest of my Sunday, but I love it. I couldn't think of a
you can't ruin it too much,
because
I got a meeting tonight, so I can't hold you.
What's your name again?
My name
and what's
is
your
Rena.
Name again?
Rena.
Okay,
Rena.
Thank you so
Rena.
Much. Rena.
You know,
thank you so much for calling in.
We appreciate you coming to the show, yeah.
Yeah, and I appreciate the dialogue, and I look forward to more of it because we need to get that information out there and, you know,
right.
start thinking about things in a different way. And please read those books, you know, study that history.
Because the stuff that you're trying to do has already been done.
Those black women already did a lot of this stuff, and you're trying to reinvent the wheel. If you go and read that history, you'll get a lot of ideas from them. They've already done a lot of stuff.
Okay.
You know, like that was effective. So, you know, Ida B. Wells was standing up against lynching. She had two states of black people just get up and just leave the states because they wouldn't stop lynching black people.
Well,
you
we're
going
to have to make that the final word because we're getting ready to go off the air, right, Scout?
Yeah, we're getting ready. I mean, we're in recording time now. We went live. We're not going to extra innings today, but everything that is being said
now
is going to the podcast. So, yeah.
Okay.
I appreciate
if
you for calling.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. I appreciate it.
This was great.
Thank you,
guys.
See y'all next Sunday.
Peace.